Well, hello. I am Matt Williamson. This is the Locked On NFL Podcast. How is everyone this wonderful Tuesday? It's been a busy one for me. As I mentioned, I went to Steeler minicamp today. OTAs, whatever, they're all kind of the same. It'll need about 5 hours of my day driving down, 3 hours of coverage, get a little nugget, a little something to eat at the calf, and then go home from there. So it's about 5.5 hours of my day. So it makes me a little thin with the rest of my stuff for you guys. But what I'm working now on my website, I told you I'm doing an 8-piece article on over-under wins. And when I'm done talking to you guys tonight, I'm going to do part 8 and write up the NFC West. So I'm kind of looking at this through that lens, you know, of what's their schedule like, where's this team, what's expectations from Vegas. And this is all going to be Niners. This is kind of a state of the Niners address. And I've done those for the website as well, as I've told you. The NFC West were the only ones that are post-draft, so check that out. I don't have that document in front of me. The only thing I really have to go off of, I just went to our buddies over at ourlads.com and pulled up the Niners depth chart, and I just want to go through it with you guys. And before we do, I think that expectations seem to be a little high, to be frank. But I think this is a team going in the right direction. But more than that, it's very clear that they have a plan in place, too. You know, the Coach Shanahan and GM Lynch know what they're after at every position. And in the Shanahan offense, and we'll get to all these pieces, and it's really going to be through that lens, too, of what Shanahan wants from his fullback, his tight end, his left guard, his quarterback, you know. And he very much wants these things. And what they inherited, they didn't have much, but they did have a lot of cap space. So they're kind of building from scratch, you know, and in the likeness of the Shanahan offense and really a Seattle-like defense, you know. So those are important things to remember. Before we kind of talk about these things, their over-under win total is 9 this year. I mean, so if you're betting over, they got to go 10-6. They do have the 10th easiest schedule in the league because, you know, they're a last-place team. They're two variable games. The games that are determined by where you land are against the Giants and the Bucks. So that's not too terrible. You know, I mean, that's, you know, it could be worse, obviously. They have the easiest schedule in their division, so that's promising. But they open the season in Minnesota. Ouch. You know, week one in Minnesota. Ooh. And then they have a pretty tough 7-game stretch to begin the season. But the second half of the year really looks easy. And, of course, things can change. You know, I mean, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little of what our team's going to look like from week 8 on. But, you know, we know who the big dogs are in the league. And, yeah, it'll change some, but that's important. So, it wouldn't surprise me if a still rebuilding Niners team, you know, begins the season 3-5, 2-4, you know, a losing record, struggling against quality teams, and then starts to put it together in the second half of the year against an easier group, got things more in place. Obviously, they're riding a lot of momentum after inserting Jimmy G in and going undefeated. Jimmy G's got 2 Super Bowl rings. He's never lost a game as a starter. Pretty good resume. Obviously, it's a little bit made up. But they also play the AFC West, which there's not an easy game there, in my opinion. I mean, and they also play the NFC North, which the Bears look better. Lions, I think, are mediocre, but Green Bay's got Rodgers now, and I mentioned the Vikes. So, not an easy path. You know, their division, the Rams are going to be tough. I mean, I think Seattle's going to be very down. I would bet they split with Arizona, you know. So, maybe they're 3-3 in their division. So, I don't think they're a 9-win team. I do think people are too excited about where the Niners are right now. But clearly, the arrow is going up with this organization. And of course, you know, you guys should know this by now. I love Garoppolo. I loved Garoppolo before they made the trade. The day they made the trade, I actually wrote, "This may be one of the best moves ever in 49ers history." Including, you know, drafting that Montana guy in the 3rd round, trading up for Jerry Rice, or trading or moving, you know, going to get Jerry Rice. You know, they've had some pretty good moments in this league, trading for Steve Young. You know, the Niners have had a pretty good history of in terms of nice moves for the franchise over the years. But I think giving up a early second for Garoppolo is phenomenal. And I do think he fits the Shanahan system well. Moves well, quick release, gets it out quick, smart, poised. He has a lot to like about him, and I think he's going to be a perennial top eight type of quarterback. They also have C.J. Beathard behind him, which, remember in the 17 draft, they used a third-round pick, and a lot of us were like, eh, guy doesn't have a lot of upside. I don't see why you'd use that pick there. And that was before the Jimmy G deal. But I could see Beathard having a very long Frank Reich-like career, you know, being behind the big gun when he goes down, fill in here and there, offer words of wisdom throughout the year. Granddaddy was a GM in the league, smart, maybe ends up as a quarterback coach, you know, like have a long, productive, useful career behind Jimmy. And that doesn't sound great for third-round pick, but that's a pretty useful tool to have a high-end backup for years. And I think that's what he could be up for. They spent big money on Jerick McKinnon. And if you recall last year, a lot of people were saying, Carlos Hyde can't catch the ball. They still threw to their backs a lot. And remember, Shanahan had Freeman and Coleman. Not only does he know how to use two backs well, but he knows how to use them as receivers. And I think McKinnon's going to put up big, big stats. You want this guy on your fantasy team. Teams tell us what they think of their players by what resources they use to obtain them or keep them. They gave McKinnon big-time money. I do think there's room for either Joe Williams or Matt Breida to get some significant touches and have a role, particularly, obviously, if McKinnon goes down. And I think that's going to be Williams. He's kind of the forgotten guy. But remember whenever they made that pick in the fourth round, and he basically was a redshirt last year, everyone was super excited about it. You know, Shanahan's stood on the table for his guy, and he's a perfect fit. Well, what's different now? Nothing. You know, like, I think Joe Williams is going to be a name to remember and a useful player for a long time. So, that's a zone-based running game. They want, I mentioned the fullback position. They made Kyle Juszczyk one of the, if not the highest paid fullback in the history of the league. They want a guy that's versatile at that position that can block. I mean, he's not just a downhill thumper, I formation, run ISO all day type of fullback. Catches a lot of passes, an accomplished route runner. Is, you know, can make a guy miss here and there, but not a liability as a blocker, but more a finesse guy than a hammer guy. But that's a, it's an important role in that offense. Again, remember Shanahan with the Falcons. They used a fullback an awful lot. They were a lot more snaps than most offenses. They used two backs a lot. I don't know if they will because they invested so much in McKinnon. That's also an offense historically that has gone through a number one receiver. And in Atlanta, it was Julio. Daddy had, you know, Brandon Marshall and had a lot of number one type receivers in his coaching career. And a real good example is Kubiak, who's the ultimate Shanahan disciple. He had Andre Johnson. You know, Andre Johnson and Julio Jones don't grow on trees, though. I mean, I think that that will be the, you know, the probably more or less the last offensive piece that they look to obtain is a true number one receiver. And from what I understand, this upcoming class has a lot of those type, you know, it's a really good receiver class. So it wouldn't surprise me if their first pick or an early pick or a high-priced free agent, you know, even an Allen Robinson, Sammy Watkins type free agent, ends up being their number one, which then makes Garcon their number two. You know, he kind of becomes the Sanu then. And they've always had a speed guy, too, you know, like DeSean Jackson types. Or in Atlanta, they absolutely always had a speedster, too. Goodwin is ideal for that, but he's a little more, too. I mean, he's kind of assumed the number one duties. And as good as he was, I don't think that's ideally exactly what he is. You know, I think Garcon will lead this team in targets, but he's really a two. You know, if you look at this through the lens of someday that one is going to be here, then you're cooking, you know, with Garcon as your two, Goodwin as your speed guy, rotate him in and out. Pettis, I think, will kind of be jack-of-all-trades type. Good with the ball in his hands, has some size, but not overwhelming in any area. Maybe he's your next Garcon, to be honest with you. You know, when you're thinking about roles here, that maybe the long-term solution is next year's first-round pick. Pettis is the two. Goodwin is the, you know, slot type of guy, or the speed type of guy. Trent Taylor also factors in as a slot player. His lack of size is disturbing to me, though, a little bit. George Kittle is a favorite of mine. I think he is an absolute breakout candidate. We saw some flashes of it last year. More and more of the season went on. This certainly is an offense that knows how to use tight ends and create mismatches for them. I think Kittle's in for a very bright career and breakout season, all those things. So, again, in terms of Shanahan offensive linemen, again, this goes back to Daddy, you know, with Schlereth and those guys. You know, they were always movement over maulers. You know, they're outside zone scheme guys that can block on the move, and they have to be able to run athleticism. So as good as a guy like Brown was, their giant right tackle, who they inherited, and was a good player for him last year, didn't really fit what they were doing. You know, even though he's a pretty good athlete for his size, he's still 6'6", 360. You know, like, not really what they're after. So they draft McGlinchey with an early pick. And maybe that shocked some people, including myself. But after they did, it made a lot of sense. And after they traded Brown, that McGlinchey's going to be their Nate Solder type who moves pretty well. Maybe eventually replace Joe Staley on the left side. Although Staley, they bumped him for two more years, so he's not going anywhere for a while. And he's still playing really well. One of the most underrated and really one of the best tackles of this generation. You know, he's a little behind the Joe Thomases and Jason Peters to me, but I think he'll be on a Hall of Fame ballot. You know, I mean, he's had a heck of a career, still playing well, and he's good enough that he can, you know, play all schemes and should be a stabilizing veteran force there. Weston Richburg is another guy they've invested in heavily this year. So the offensive line is going to look a lot different. You know, a new right tackle in McGlinchey, new center in Richburg. Richburg needs to stay healthy, but he absolutely fits that Alex Mack movement role. I think this is a real good fit for them. The guards worry me a little bit. And it's kind of put up or shut up time for Josh Garnett, their 2016 first-round pick. This staff didn't draft him, and I thought he was more mauler than mover. But, you know, first-round guard, and no one, you know, whenever they pulled the trigger in first round, no one's like, boy, he's not good enough to be a first-round pick. You know, he's a first-round guard talent, just hasn't put together yet. He's talent enough to fit any scheme, too. You know, he's the right guard. They need him to be a superstar. And if he can be a well-above-average guard, I think this line will be quite good. The other hole I see in this team, though, talking about offseason needs a year from now, is the left guard spot. They have two other former first-round picks, Jonathan Cooper, Laken Tomlinson. Neither has lived up to that billing. They flat out have been, you know, disappointing, especially if you use a first-round pick on a guard. Better be a starter, better be a high-end starter. Neither has been. We'll see if they can coach him up, maybe get something out of either. That would be great for them. But it wouldn't shock me at all if this upcoming offseason they go get a guard high in the draft or free agency, and it would be a movement-based guy. All right, defensively for San Francisco. Pulled up their depth chart here again, like I said. Their defensive coordinator, Robert Saleh, is, you know, it's going to be a Seahawks-like cover three type of, you know, type of deal. Fair enough. So look at it through that those eyes. I mentioned that they need a number one receiver and a starting guard on offense. I think the thing that they need the most on defense, without question, is an edge rusher. You know, is the Cliff Averill. You know, right now they have a couple guys. You know, they've had quite a few dudes that rush the passer well off the edge. The speed ball off the edge. You know, that isn't, you know, I'm looking at the depth chart here. Jeremiah Tachu has some of those traits and probably will be better than what they've had there. Eli Harold hasn't really been that guy, but that's who they're living with at that position. Fair enough. I mean, you can't have everything. Rome wasn't built in a day. So I think that's going to be a high offseason priority for him. But meanwhile, Solomon Thomas, who had an okay rookie year, he's their Michael Bennett. You know, he's their strong side D end that kicks inside on throwing downs, wins with quickness, power, leverage, you know, like a Bennett. I mean, Michael Bennett's much better, obviously. Earl Mitchell's their nose tackle type. You know, he's their early down player. And then they have two other first-round picks, Garnell Thomas, as you know, Eric Armstead, DeForest Buckner, both of whom, I mentioned Buckner yesterday, actually, in my favorite under 25 guys. So you obviously know I'm really, really high on him. He's a stud. I mean, he's a great player. Coming into his own as one of the best J.J. Watt-style players in the league, you know, with length and, you know, power and physicality and ability to run and athletes, and he's a stud. Armstead's a little behind him in his development, even though he's a year older or year, you know, been in the league a year longer, both Oregon guys. But he's starting to rush the passer well from an interior position, too. And this defensive front likes a variety of styles of players going back to Seattle. And they have them. You know, I mean, again, they don't have the speed ball off the edge. They'd love to have a Von Miller type, but that is not on the team as we speak. At the second level, Reuben Foster has to stay clean, you know, but he can absolutely be their Bobby Wagner. I mean, I mentioned yesterday, I did not include him in my 25 years and younger top 10, but he absolutely could be at the top of the list next year. I mean, he's that kind of linebacker. He can be the next great linebacker in this league. Again, his issues are not at all concerning with on the field. They're all off the field and health. And that's the only reason he was not a top 10 pick in the 2017 draft. Sounds like that's in better shape from what I've read than, you know, what we thought a couple weeks ago. Who knows? But he has to stay clean. They also drafted Fred Warner in this past draft in the third round. Really athletic, off the ball, run and hit type. I don't have a Seattle comp for him, you know, but I would say he's actually probably a little closer to Cam Chancellor than he is KJ Wright. But that's not fair to look at him as he's Cam Chancellor. He's a linebacker. I mean, he's that off linebacker, that will linebacker, weak side guy. Tried to protect him with some studs in front of him. Fits today's NFL well as a coverage player. I like that pick a lot. I was very, very high on that pick, and I think Warner is going to be a real quality player. Speaking of Seattle, they signed Richard Sherman this year. He's going to play the exact same role as the left corner, as he always has. Press coverage, off coverage, cover three, man free with a free safety. And I'm sure he'll be a positive influence on these young guys of how to best adapt to the scheme and run everything the way Seattle did so well for so long. You know, and that namely is Witherspoon. He was third round pick last year. He's a longer, leaner, 6 foot type of corner, you know, exactly what they're looking for. There's some other corners of note. You know, DJ Reed was a fifth round pick, but this is another position to me that probably is on the wish list. You know, that I mentioned two spots on offense. I think there's two spots on defense, corner and edge rusher. They happen to be expensive positions, especially considering Sherman's age and coming off an injury. He's not the long-term solution. So I do think they'll be in the market for another first-round type long corner, you know, eventually to complete this defense. So what about safety? Well, they also have K'Wan Williams. He's their nickel corner. He's decent. You know, he's a pure nickel corner and a good player. They're really good at safety. The people don't mention Jaquiski Tartt as nearly enough when they talk about the best safeties in this league. He's more the Cam Chancellor than he is Earl Thomas, that's for sure. But he's versatile. He's big. He has really blossomed since being a second-round pick in 2015. A guy you may not know about is Adrian Colbert, seventh-round pick that passed last year. Really a surprise. Good athlete, really good athlete, hitter, active safety for these guys that can do a lot of things too that kind of came out of nowhere. I mean, he was a seventh round pick that I didn't know a lot about. And the more you watch him, the more he shows up. I mean, this guy is a big time keeper. So remember that name, Adrian Colbert, for sure. Jimmy Ward's another former first round pick from another regime, 2014. He is flip-flop between corner, safety. I think they're hoping he can be their Earl Thomas type, you know, play well off the ball. I think he could also have to do some slot duties and more things asked of him. you know, he's fine. I mean, he's fine. He's also at a somewhat of a career crossroads too, and we'll see. But there is talent there. I remember when they made that pick in 14. Again, it was a different regime. I was kind of like, I don't love that. You know, he's one of those safeties we're going to try at corner moves, kind of like Randall from the Packers, now Browns. Sort of in that mold, smaller, but moves well, active. So, in the end, I don't think the Niners are going to get to double-digit wins. You know, I don't think they're a playoff team. The NFC is so loaded. You know, if you're looking at the NFC, I think the Rams are better. Certainly the Packers and the Vikes. Probably three-quarters of the NFC South. And the Eagles, you know, for sure. So, and maybe some others, you know, but it's going to be an uphill climb to be one of the six that go to the postseason. But if you listen to this, you realize I like a lot of what they're doing. And in the end, they got Jimmy and they got Shanahan. That's a Breeze-Peyton type long-term combination possibly.